Guys, welcome to another edition of The Pulse. We're back as we always are, talking to people who are doing cool things. They have cool stories. And today on The Pulse, multiple TV shows, movies, Emmy nominations, occasional controversy, books, right? You've written a book. Sarah Silverman joins us. How are you?
Hi, I'm Will. How are you?
I'm good. When I said occasional controversy, even you went,
You know, what are you going to do?
it happens, right? If they're not talking about you, that's a problem.
Right.
Take us back. How did you get into this? Get started with the whole career? Let's go way back.
Well, I'll go really far back because I was one of those three-year-olds who had a dad who thought it was hilarious to teach his toddler swears. And when I would say them, you know, in the middle of the supermarket, I would get this wild approval from grown-ups, like, despite themselves. And I think I became addicted to shock value, you know, I think, you know, and I loved being funny. I loved making people laugh. It made my arms itch with glee. And so I always wanted to be a comedian. I mean, really since I was little. And once I knew it was a job you could have, you know. And so I was, you know, class clown, stuff like that. And moved to New York when I was 18 and started working at a comedy club, passing out flyers, did that 10 hours a day for 2 years. And it got me some stage time. And I just went from there on and on and on. Little triumphs
along the way.
Big failures. Yeah.
and big triumphs. It's interesting because the people that we've talked to, they seem to fall into two categories. Like, it's either someone like you who knew it at a young age and was like, I'm going all in. Or there were others, like Michael Blackson was on with us and said that somebody at his Domino's delivery job went, you're pretty funny, you should go to open mic. And he stumbled into it.
Wow, I love those stories.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very cool. Now, as you kind of went along that path, big successes also. And you Google you hear a lot of your stories. We'll get to that because there's a whole rabbit hole when you Google you to do research.
Yeah, boy.
but at some point you end up on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. So, you know, the truth is I moved to New York to go to NYU from New Hampshire, where I grew up. And I was a drama student and it was real expensive. And I was passing out flyers for a comedy club from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. and trying to stay awake during classes. And my dad actually said, if you drop out of school, I'll pay your rent, like as if it's your sophomore, junior, senior year for the next 3 years.
Okay.
And I said, okay. And I still like stole some classes because it's not like they take attendance or giant lectures and stuff. And I didn't need a degree. I just wanted information and to learn stuff. And by the time I would have graduated, by the time I was 22, I was writing for Saturday Night Live and a feature performer, which is very impressive. But I got fired after a year, if that's any consolation.
I mean, you got there. You can't get fired unless you get. Wait, so your father incentivized you dropping out of school and you still kept going. That's interesting.
No, I dropped out,
but kept going to class.
Yeah, I went to some classes that interested me because I still had a pass. I could get into the building and information, you know, comics need information.
That is a unique perspective. You got fired in a year from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
But everything that I've read, you credit that with making you tougher? Like, it wasn't a huge defeat for you.
It was a huge defeat for me, but overcoming it, you know, it's like a broken bone. It heals stronger, you know? I mean, I had like a cluster of firings, like Saturday Night Live. I got fired from like a sitcom I was hired for. And then I got like a real complex about it. Like I would like make sure I still had the job before I'd go in the morning and stuff, because I was like used to getting fired. But somehow I outgrew that and ended up keeping jobs.
Okay.
That's a good thing. There's a moment when you're fired from Saturday Night Live where you're like, am I still in show business? So, you know, I had to go back to the basics. I went back to stand-up, which is always my constant. And, you know, it's everything is good, every experience, you know, as long as it brings you to where you want to, you know, where you are. I don't know. Okay. I never plan. I've never been like, in 5 years, I want to be here or anything. I know I probably should, but I just never did.
Well, I don't know if you should. It's working out for you. Yeah. So keep like along that path.
I like doing odd jobs.
Okay. You got tougher from Saturday Night Live. Were you always this person? Like, I've seen a lot of your stand-up going back, but you're very comfortable now taking on the tough. And the tough topics. And, you know, I mean, over the years, I've seen some of the things people were like, huh, has that always been you?
Well, maybe the bones of it a little, and how I was raised, but I think, no, I've changed a lot over time. I mean, hopefully we all do. And, as the world changes around me, as I grow and change, get older, or, you know, learn more about myself and others in the world, my comedy changes. I mean, I think it's crazy when it doesn't, you know, when you just like stick with one thing. And I get it, though, you know. I mean, comics who maybe get famous from their first special or their first whatever, and it's very scary to move on from that persona or that vibe or that kind of comedy. And but if you don't, I feel like you become a caricature of yourself, and it's a missed opportunity. I get it, because I think comics are terrified of losing their fans. Mm-hmm. But I just think one thing I really learned is comedy really dies in the second guessing of your audience. You just have to stick with what you find funny now, you know. And I still find a lot of the same stuff funny because I'm basically a 10-year-old. Yeah. But my world, and, you know, it's like when you change your perspective even just one degree, the whole world looks different, you know. So your comedy should reflect that, I think. But it can be scary. It can be, you know, you get some people who are like, remember when you were funny? And then you get some people who like you for the first time. But that's just the risk you have to take, you know. And I learned that from a lot of great comics before me, you know. I always think of Chris Rock because, you know, I would watch him and he would, you know, do a special and be just so genius. And then just go back to zero. You know, a lot of comics still stick with like the comedy that works and the jokes that work and repeat themselves a lot. And of course, like, I hone stuff over a long time, but once you record it, it's just you gotta kiss it goodbye and be willing to bomb. And bombing when people know who you are is like especially hard, because you feel like you're disappointing people. You know, it's like, I've seen Chris, and I've done this now just from learning from him. Like, he'll start over, he'll go up at the comedy, you know, the Comedy Cellar, and the crowd, they'll introduce him and the crowd will go bananas. They're so excited. And then he'll start just trying stuff, and he knows he's going to disappoint people, but you have to do it in order to write new material. And like, okay, there's something here. Let's try this. All right, that didn't go well, but maybe if I tweak it, whatever. But so much of the work has to happen in front of an audience. Yeah. You know, the audience is half of it.
And you have much more to lose. Like, once you get to that level of success that you're talking about, like, it's easy fumbling through stuff when you're like, I'm just trying to learn. Once you've achieved that level of success, and people are like, that's not what I expected.
They have certain expectations from you, but, you know, meeting those expectations is over time doesn't really get you any, you know, I mean, I don't know. I just think it's important to just keep moving, trying new stuff. And so, you know, like my boyfriend is also a comic and he'll see me bomb, you know, sometimes and he, you know, I shake it off and he's like, God, you're so good at that. You're so good at like it not ruining, you know, your week.
That's a fly on the wall conversation when your boyfriend is like, yo, you were awful, but you're good at shaking it off. Like, congrats.
But it's true. You have to risk bombing and doing bad and or going over the line or not going far enough or missing, not, you know, I mean, it's a lot of trial and error and you have to be able to be willing to go back and do that again, you know, but. In Philly, I'll be very well honed, I promise.
We are sure. We have no doubts at all about what we're going to see in Philly. I was just watching video of you hosting The Daily Show. And this collage of conservatives, how you kind of introduced yourself. Here's what they think of me. And it was funny and it was hilarious. But the part that I was thinking about and wanted to ask you was you're now there. Like you have that intense emotional response from some, well, from all really. Some love, some are like, I really wish you would go somewhere and shut up. Is that hard when you're on that type of radar, when those type of people are swinging at you?
I guess, sure. But I really have learned not to take it on. You know, I mean, the good and the bad you have to like really work on, I think, as a grown up adult to not have your self-worth be impacted positively or negatively by outside forces. You know, I don't know them. They don't know me, you know, but also I'm not everybody's cup of tea and I'm very comfortable with that.
It was. We actually just spoke with Michael Rappaport. And it was interesting because he's another one who I asked about that. Like he's taking on issues through comedy that really matter to him. And because of that, you put yourself on people's radar. And when it is personal, it was that same kind of thing. Like, you know, okay, these people are talking about me, even though they don't know me. And I'm trying to do good. Like, is that part of it hard?
I love Michael Rappaport. I mean, we're very different, but he seems like a real tough guy, but he's such a mushy sweetheart. And I enjoy watching him and he reacts very differently. I think he takes a lot to heart.
Okay.
But he also has fun with it, you know?
Yeah, it was interesting.
We like to go see Meryl Streep movies together.
Oh, it's that kind of relationship. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he loves her. I do too.
The warm and fuzzy relationship. All right, so you're coming to Philly. In Philly, yes. May 4th, you're on tour going a lot of places. So our national audience who's not in Philly can see you other places as you continue on tour. But you're at the Met May 4th. What are we going to see on the Grow Some Lips tour?
Yeah.
Okay, what are we going to see?
Boy, I you'll just be in for it. I'm. It's silly, you know, vaguely, certainly maybe socially political comedy, but also aggressively dumb, which is my favorite.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to check out Terrence Nance has an art exhibit in Philly that same time called Swarm. I don't know why I'm promoting that, but I'm going to try to check it out. I think you guys should too. I think he's very interesting. But check me out after at the Met.
We encourage everybody to do that. You have a podcast. So I follow you on social. All right. I did talk radio for a long time. And so when I saw your podcast, I went, she takes calls? Like that's a whole different phenomenon. Like, do you enjoy that? Like, you're just going at it, hearing people's stories, that whole interaction.
I love it. I love it. You know, I knew I didn't want celebrity guests. You know, I didn't want to have a podcast like that only because the thought of asking people to do my podcast is my biggest fear. You know, like I just, that's why I never did a podcast. But I really wanted to do something where people could call in. And I can't believe, I mean, this is how, I don't know, xenophobic I secretly am maybe or something, but like, I didn't even realize it would be international. Like, the diversity of calls is so exciting to me, you know, people calling from Lebanon, you know, or Australia, England, Israel, you know, Iran. And it's been so cool and almost like a community forming of like people who call back and let me know how it worked out. And but it's funny, but it really is a far more earnest podcast than I set out to do, you know, because really the callers set the trajectory of the episodes and the people who are calling just have been calling in with looking for advice and having trouble and really getting deep stuff. And I just go with it. You know, I mean, I tell them, listen, I'm talking out of my butt here, but I think, you know, but it's, I'm very interested in that stuff. And just, you know, my hero is Mr. Rogers. And, you know, and he, you know, believed that people are supposed to help each other, you know, especially older people helping younger people at different stages of life. And I like that stuff, you know.
It was, we talked earlier and you mentioned that it is, you have to be careful getting too high with the support or too low with the criticism.
Right.
But one of the things that I saw on the podcast that I guess kind of resonated with me was people who were like, I remember when you said 15 years ago, or I care about your opinion on so-and-so. Like, from my perspective, I feel like that's the stuff that would have more of an impact on me. Like, that's people who are taking the time to express that they care and they heard you.
Yeah, and it's cool. And also just like, I mean, listen, I'm just a schmo on the, you know, on the internet or wherever you see me, or, you know, I'm just a person, but I feel like I can model what it can look like to be accountable for stuff or to, I mean, that's not why I did it. I did it just earnestly, but like, you know, or be sorry for things. I don't believe in apologizing if you're not sorry, but I believe in apologizing if you're sorry. And I see such a very deep fear around being sorry in adults, grownups, you know, yeah. And people I know, people I love, figures in the world. And I find it's just so curious what you think you lose from being sorry about something or taking accountability about something. For me, it's so freeing. You know, it's, it just is. I forgive myself and you can forgive me or not, or, you know what I mean? It really doesn't have to be so scary. And I think people, in order to circumvent just like basic emotions, like feeling sorry, will go do some real mental gymnastics to go around it, you know, to find ways to be right.
It's so odd. So I don't know if you can see it. I have a list of notes and things that I took and researched, and this is my little paper. And so one of the things that I have written on these notes things that I want to remember to talk to you about. And I said, she's been involved in controversy, and I have, and apologizes. That's unusual for a lot of people. Like, yeah. I have that written down on the notes because I saw you kind of going back, and it goes back years, and, you know, Britney Spears comedy and things like that you stepped back and apologized for. I don't know why that's unusual, but it is.
It's funny because, you know, I have comedian friends who are like, I'm so mad you apologized for that. And I just am like, you can still enjoy the comedy that it was if you want to, you know, but I feel sorry about it. I don't want to hurt people's feelings. I mean, listen, I still go hard at things. I'm finding the line and sometimes go over it. But I know that I can apologize, you know. It's not, I'm not taking it in vain. I'm not being casual about it, only in that I'm not afraid to do it if something comes up and I'm sorry. It's so odd to me, you know, that you wrote that's unusual. It's so unusual to me. It's so odd to me that that's unusual. Like, we could live in a society where we can be fairly loose with that, you know, not if you don't mean it.
Right.
That's why I don't understand when people are made to apologize for things. Like, what is the point of that?
Right. I said what I said. You know, if you don't believe
have to apologize. Sorry. You know, it's like no one should be made to apologize because a forced apology means nothing. Right. You know,
the very carefully worded, you know, if you were offended,
that your publicist wrote,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry if you took it that, you know, that's not an apology.
Right. It really says in the prompter, like, read this.
Right.
And you
exactly.
go ahead and go through it. And I absolutely agree with you. And I wrote it's unusual because I feel like it is, but I don't think that it should be. Like, I agree with you. It shouldn't be that hard. Like, wow, I didn't think about it that way. And that's now that you've made me more clear.
We don't have school systems that teach the important stuff very early in kindergarten and in first grade, the basics, you know?
Yeah. Easy stuff.
Well,
it's simple. It's not easy stuff.
That's exactly right. It's not easy. It's really hard for people. But the answer always, it may not be easy, but it's always simple.
Now you have...
come to my comedy show. What is happening?
But there's a lot of things. Part of your comedy, you have over the last 8 years gotten deeper into politics, political statements, comedy and otherwise.
Sure,
And taking kind of a stand on issues while joking about it as well. Mm-hmm. Why? Why'd you feel the need to get that actively involved in these types of things?
I'm interested in it. And when I get a bug up my butt, it makes me write. You know, I don't know. I think we're supposed to take care of each other. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I have a bag of skills and I can use them to help sometimes, or from other people's perspective, hurt. You know, I don't know. It depends, you know, but, you know, and sometimes it's offensive to people. And sometimes, you know, I made a video like, sell the Vatican, feed the world, you know, and some people loved it, some people hated it.
Right.
I like that, you know, but it's funny, those same people that hated it, now we have this new Pope, not so new now, but, you know, the people that say, like, the Pope, what the Pope says goes, and now we have this kind of liberal Pope where they're like, well, not this Pope,
right. You know. As long as they agree with me, what they say goes.
Right, but, you know, just the art there could feed the world, you know, but not that it's beholden to them, but it is, it's kind of their business. But lots of stuff, you know, I feel that, you know, I believe very strongly in a woman's right to choose. I can't believe where we're at now. I mean, I'm traveling the country and, you know, half the states I'm in, abortion is illegal. You know, that's not someplace I thought I'd see in my lifetime. And so I talk about it, you know.
You feel a responsibility too? You feel a responsibility too because of your platform to take on those issues and do it in a way that makes people, I mean, laugh, but also think.
I don't feel burdened by a responsibility to, but I certainly take advantage of the platform that I have. Mm-hmm. And I try to be thoughtful about it. You know, I have people in my life that feel very differently about abortion, and I have no desire to fight with them about it. My fight is with the disingenuous politicians that are taking people's rights, fundamental rights, away, body autonomy, you know, it's basic.
I said when I started, Googling you and doing research for you can send you down all kinds of rabbit holes. So it goes all the way back to you being in Maxim magazines and people talking about how hot you are in Maxim. And then following that thread leads to Sarah Silverman feet and then a commercial that, you know, did.
Oh, yes. Like,
all kinds of stuff. Have you ever Googled yourself and seen the thousand directions this goes?
Yeah, it's always interesting, like what the, when you write it and you see what fills in, you know, like, but the feet thing is real. Like a lot of women in show business, if you type their name, like the word feet comes up. That's how many foot people there are. Yeah, it's real.
That's odd. Okay. And I will admit now, so you did the Uber One commercial.
Right.
In the Uber One commercial, you had something like the natural feet or something like that.
Oh, big natural feet or toes. Yeah, something. Right. Yeah.
That's actually a website where you call people sickos for following the whole thing.
So we had this idea to do this and say like, what, you know, I can't remember the ad exactly, but then it says like, go to Big Natural Feet or Toes or whatever. And they bought the domain name at Uber One. And then when you click on it, I'm like, you went to the site? What are you, you know, sick?
Now, have I just put myself on blast that I know that?
No, but the great thing is if you go, then there's like, all right, well, I'll give you an extra, you know, whatever off. And they offer like another savings of some kind.
Yeah, that part was interesting. Sarah Silverman.
I was so excited. I never asked to do commercials, so I was very excited.
Yeah, well, that one was fun. We have, as we remind people to come and check out the show, and time really goes by quickly. We're already 30 minutes in to this discussion.
Oh my God.
We have the whole concept of the pulse and talking to people. And the reason I love the long form discussion is that the theme is use your voice for good. So after we go through the whole discussion, we get to the end and ask people what use your voice for good means for you.
Well, I mean, I guess what we were talking about, like, if you have a platform and you're able to bring awareness to stuff, but and also, are you saying, like, what are some charities I might suggest?
Sure, whatever it means to you. If you have charities you're actively involved in, if there are things you want people to pay attention to, like, you tell us. Your platform is yours.
Well, I would say if you are for a woman's right to choose or a person with a uterus's right to choose, check out Abortion Action Front, run by Liz Winstead, because wherever you are in the country, there are ways that you can get involved, and she'll help you. She'll direct you to somewhere where you can see how you can get involved locally. I love Second Nurture, which is a foundation that helps with fostering and adoption and finding forever homes for people. And also people who, you know, it does so much. You know, people get kids, we're wrapping up and I'm like being verbose.
I've got nothing but time. I'm at work. So you take as much time as you want.
You know, there are vulnerable people who get their kids taken away because they don't have a refrigerator. Well, this group will get you a refrigerator. You know what I mean? Like there's so many crazy things in the foster system that are not helpful. And this really, Second Nurture really helps with all that stuff. And Razia's Ray of Hope, boy, it's a school for girls in Afghanistan. And it's really thriving despite the power that be's wishes that women were not educated there. And I love giving to them. They've added a college. And I think it to me, you go, well, I do stuff in America. That's great. You should, you know, whatever. But I love that because educating women is always a great way to motivate change locally and globally, in my opinion. There's a few.
I love the fact that we ask that question, and sometimes people have answers. Sometimes there's depth to them. Sometimes there's not. You are the first person who needed more time to talk about all the ways to use their voice for good. I think that that is a great thing. So we appreciate that.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you for taking the time out. May 4th at the Met. You also can listen to your podcast. Follow you on social because there are more places to see you other than just in Philadelphia.
Sure.
And when you're in Philly, come by and hang out.
I will. Philly. I love it. And the Met. I love getting to perform at a place where the sound is like the thing.
Yeah. The Met's nice. It's nice. Yeah. You're going to have fun there.
I can't wait.
We will see you May 4th.
All right. See you there.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Take care. Guys, thanks so much for listening to The Pulse with Bill Anderson today with comedian, actor, and do we go so far as to say advocate, Sarah Silverman. That was fun. Like, I really enjoy that part of this show and this podcast is getting a better understanding of who people are. Simple things like not being bothered by saying I'm sorry or apologizing. I agree with her. We would be a lot better off as a society if things like that really were that simple. So I appreciate her taking that on. Take a minute to click subscribe right at the top of your screen or your phone or however you're listening to this. That way you'll get a notification every Monday when a new episode of The Pulse comes out. I also encourage you to head on over to YouTube, search The Pulse with Bill Anderson. There are so many episodes with so many great guests, from Winona Judd to the Jacksons to Chrissy Metz to Michael Blackson, the Vivica A. Fox. Episodes that you may not have heard, I encourage you to check them out, hear them, watch them. I believe that you will enjoy them. Hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. I am always eager to hear from you, and we will talk to you again next week. I leave you as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.